Greetings, salutations, welcome to your destination for the worldwide leaders in contrarian a-holery. And that is objection with an exclamation point here at DVD Verdict. And I am Judge David Johnson, joined as always by Judge Dan the Mancini. Dancini, I have no idea. Is there a shorthand for Dan Mancini?
I don't know. That kind of flows off the tongue well.
Yeah, it does. It does. So, here we are. I guess I'll just check in. Dan, I haven't talked in a while. Anything new before we get into the contrarian a-holery?
Not a lot. I'm actually sneaking in a stealth review right now because I missed the request deadline last week.
Like so. A review of the movie Stealth?
No. just one that, Mike Staley's not going to be expecting. But I'm whipping off a review of the Blu-ray of Big Trouble in Little China.
Not bad,
because we don't have one.
So. That's something that needs to be rectified immediately.
Yeah, and I had time, and I didn't get my requests in, so I've had nothing to do this week, review wise. So why not?
Yeah, well, that sounds exciting. How is it? Why don't you give us a sneak peek? How is the Blu-ray of Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh, spectacular! As spectacular as the movie.
that's tall praise. Any like Blu-ray extras? Anything good on it, or is it? Kind of
well, it's got everything from the old two disc.
Yeah. That has become the norm. That has become the norm.
Yeah.
So, random thought as well, because we talked, did we talk about the Expendables on this podcast?
We haven't yet.
Have you seen the Expendables?
I have not yet. I'm going to try to get out and see it this week.
I have a feeling that'll make it, that'll be on, That'll be a subject, I think, on one of our episodes one of these days. So,
but
I think you would very much like it, and it's going to go hand in hand with kind of the manliness that we're tackling for this episode, which has got a swashbuckling theme. Is that correct, or a sword slinging theme? I don't know. Sword slinging.
It's not quite sword and sandal, but it's definitely. Middle Ages,
yeah.
Sword slinging,
yeah. I guess it wouldn't be swashbuckling. I think more like pirates and capes and whatnot, and like
sliding down.
Yes, yes. but we will begin as we always do, exhibiting our non-contrarian a-holery, just to show that we're not just being dickish internet trolls. That we do like stuff people like. And hate stuff people hate. So this go-round is a movie that's near and dear to my heart. And you had said that you probably don't love it as much as I do. And that's fine. I think we could agree that it's at least a good time throwback film that I grew up loving. And that's Willow.
Absolutely.
Yes. When's the last time you viewed Willow?
It's been a few years. It's definitely been a few years. Like I say, I'm a little bit more of a geezer, so... Came out like right when I was graduating high school. So
1990 maybe? That'd be about right.
88.
88. Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's very fond memories of that. Were you too cool for school maybe, with that movie, if you're just graduating high school?
Yeah, I think I was at the time.
Like you couldn't admit
it was later on when I appreciated it.
You couldn't admit to all your awesome friends that you like Willow.
Right, exactly. it would have probably damaged my chances with girls and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, did that work out for you? Was that a strategy that worked out for you?
Dissing Willow for girls?
Yes.
I'm trying to think. It may have. I'm not sure that was the factor, but may have been one of the things.
Well,
and parachute pants.
It's
hard to weigh those two things.
That is a no-brainer. Did you have a haircut that said fresh on it or something,
I might have had a mullet back then. I'm not sure.
Oh, nice. That's a colloquialism that needs to return. Fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh. I don't know. All right. Well, anyway, Willow. So, I guess a lot of it is based on nostalgia. My me being a few years your junior, my dad brought me to see it, and I just remember really, really adoring it, thinking it was just the most badass thing ever. And you could see how old was I? I was probably, 11, 10 or 11 or so. So you could see how a 10 or 11-year-old would really think that it's the bee's knees,
Well, and
Yeah, go ahead.
It's much more awesome than the concept or the poster would lead you to believe.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Because what I really like about it is it's a PG-rated movie, but it is a violent PG.
It is
shockingly violent. I mean, just the big fight scene at the end between Mad Mardigan and General Kale, where, you know, just Kale gets stabbed like crazy, and then you get the close-up of him getting just gut impaled, you know? Uh-huh. I mean, it was almost pornographic, but still got the PG. So that was probably before the PG-13 became so ubiquitous. I mean, the PG-13 rating was around then, right?
Yeah.
It would have had
that was Temple of Doom that kicked that off.
That's true. So, but they certainly pushed it to the limit. So, I mean, it's a pretty violent family film, you know, and it's marketed as a family movie too, you know?
Yeah.
Like my DVD is marketed as a family film. Kids got to grow up sometime.
Exactly. If you don't desensitize them young, you know.
That's right.
They're going to be vulnerable out there in the world.
Also, Willow known for really being a pioneering force as far as CGI goes. You know, if you remember that transformation scene, you know, towards the end where he was transforming the sorceress and all the different kind of animals. So, you know, that's kind of cutting edge. And it still managed to blend some of the fun old school stop motion stuff with that two-headed dragon. So, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome little movie.
It had high impact flooding. So.
And looking at the poster of it, which I'm doing right now.
Yeah, how's it?
It really looks like Peter Jackson ripped it off to make Lord of the Rings.
Oh, douchebag.
Warwick Davis really looks like Frodo in the poster, and looking like Aragorn, and, you know, I mean, it really looks like Jackson just stole Willow.
Yeah, although Willow just stole a lot of Lord of the Rings anyway, originally.
Yeah.
So I guess it all kinds of evens out.
But, I mean, he even has the same hair as Frodo.
Oh, the kind of poofy, flowy
kind of, yeah, the kind of hobbit perm.
Hobbit perm. So, I don't know. And just an overall good time. Whenever I can talk about how much I love Willow, I'll seize the opportunity. I don't know if a Blu-ray is coming anytime soon, seeing it took forever for the DVD to show up. The DVD was nice, but obviously a Blu-ray would be nicer. So, who knows?
Yeah. You know, George Lucas is not in a rush to...
He's not in a rush.
...put stuff out on Blu-ray.
So, yeah, I don't think that's anywhere. That's not even being breathed about in the pipeline. So, yeah, we'll see. But someday. But for now, the DVD will suit me just fine. So, anyway, Willow. I think it's safe to say that most people like it, right? It's not being contrary to say that people don't like it. You know?
No. I think it's safe to say. And, you know, I like it enough that now after we've discussed it, I'm going to have to go watch it.
That is a dangerous after effect of this podcast. I mean, I rewatched Terminator 3 when we talked about Terminator 3.
Yeah.
I feel compelled to rewatch all that stuff. So, yeah. Now, is it too intense for your kids, you think?
Yeah, probably right now.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, my son can handle a lot. He's only 5, and he's seen, like, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And they don't faze him at all. But I don't know, Willow. There's not people getting stabbed.
That's true.
Like, crazy.
Like, graphically stabbed, you know.
There's some monsters and stuff, but, you know, that doesn't really bother him.
Yeah, no, Willow, yeah, just throat cuts, the, you know, people throw
impaled and stuff.
Impaled, arrows, ninja stars getting thrown at their faces.
Yeah.
Eaten by, you know, that troll scene is pretty upsetting as well. You know, you know, remember when that troll turns into some kind of bloody polyp?
Yeah.
That actually upset me a little bit, too. That was a little hurt. So, all right, well, I look forward to the date when your child will be able to enjoy it as much as I did. So
yes, yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's move on now. I mean, I think we're done playing nice. Let us take upon ourselves the duty of defending another sword-slinging actioner that is not as beloved. And right now I'm looking at it. It's got about a 33% or so. You know, on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's
not good.
Definitely not good. You see any little quotes that jump out at you?
Well, the one on top for me is The 13th Warrior is a brazen attempt to brand Antonio Banderas as an A-lister with a C-grade script. Failure attends.
Yikes. How about this one? The 13th Warrior reeks so badly of melodrama and poor acting that it carries a worse scent than a canine's least appetizing residue.
Wow. That is a good one.
Yeah. Stupefyingly horrendous. How about that one?
Yeah. The film is based on Eaters of the Dead, possibly the worst novel Michael Crichton has ever written. And this film isn't even a passable adaptation.
How about this? This is a real low blow. Let's face it, Call the Conqueror, as dumb and as hokey as it gets, was a lot more fun. Conqueror with Kevin Sorbo, I believe.
Uh-huh. Man. Everything is first rate except the characters and the story.
That's not nice. I guess it's safe to say that it's not really appreciated. So,
no.
Not really appreciated at all. So this is where we will, you know, we will step in. We will step in to take it upon ourselves to, I guess to make our move. So let us now make our move.
Okay. It's your move.
Thank you, Mr. Harrigan. So let's bring on one of our favorite contrarian a-holes. And actually, we could even take contrarian out of that. He's just one of our favorite a-holes. And that is Steve Power. Mr. Power, welcome.
Yo, I was born ready.
Nice. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Now, before we get you going with the 13th Warrior, I know you enjoy some Willow, some Fierce too, right?
Willow is a movie very near and dear to my heart.
I will let you say a few things here, just because your passion for it might be closer to mine. Perhaps.
I mean, I'm a Star Wars kid. I was born the year Star Wars was released, so I grew up with George Lucas's sci-fi zaniness, and Willow to me was just, it took Star Wars and all the archetypes of Star Wars and kind of completely transplanted them into a medieval fantasy setting. And of course, being a big loser nerd when I was in elementary school, I don't think it's really possible to be a loser nerd when you're in elementary school, but in elementary school, I had discovered the joys of Dungeons and Dragons. So seeing Willow on a movie theater screen less than 2 years after I'd started playing Dungeons and Dragons, man, let me tell you, that was revelatory. That was amazing.
Favorite moment in Willow?
Oh, pretty much any scene where Val Kilmer is speaking.
Yeah, Kilmer is a god in that movie.
I thought Mad Mardigan was like the most badass character. And I mean, you compared him to Aragorn. Man, Aragorn is nowhere near as joyful and cool as Mad Mardigan.
That is true. With a
4 foot broadsword,
And he's not afraid to commit some serious homicide to get his.
Yeah, I mean, it had me when I saw the first trailer, and you get that little. One of the money sequences in the trailer was, him sitting in the cage and Willow looks up at the cage. I suppose you're a warrior. I am the greatest swordsman who ever lived.
That's right.
I was like, okay, I got to see this movie.
And it's blended pretty well with some fun slapstick stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's got that sense of fun. It's got the action. It's got like a simple but effective plot. The plot really carries the film pretty well. It's got that journey, which I always like road movies,
Yeah.
They entertain me. And another thing with it, and this one is kind of more, a personal sappy kind of connection to it, but it was one of the last movies I saw in theater with my dad before I became, old enough to start going to movies with girlfriends and stuff like that. So it's kind of got a soft spot.
Yeah, same here. Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely do have a soft spot for the movie because of that. And my dad loves it just as much as I do. Dad sits down and watches it probably 2 or 3 times a year.
It's a very good father-son movie.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's a lot of fun. I love the score. I think Horner did a great job with the score. And that final battle scene, man, like you said, graphic violence, it's awesome. And just the choreography even, the sword fight between Mad Mardigan and Kale is just, it's a dirty, brutal fight. It's not a lightsaber battle or Errol Flynn fencing with a saber. It's a dirty, brutal street fight of a sword fight,
In the mud, in the rain, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And Eric was awesome. Eric was so cool, Yes. For a second string character who might have had 10 lines in the movie, he made an impression,
Sit in your cage and rot.
Yeah. He was like the only sympathetic human in the entire movie,
And Sorsha was just super hot as well.
Oh my god. Oh man.
There's a reason that Val Kilmer married Joanne Whaley after that, probably.
She was not stupid.
She was on fire in that film. Yeah. So.
And then she goes and does Navy SEALs, which should pop up on an episode in the future, because that's a lot of fun, too.
Okay. All right, well, that'll take. Let's move along, then, before we get really out of hand here. 13th Warrior. So, Steve, since you're on a groove with Willow, why don't you kick us off? 13th Warrior, why is it underappreciated?
It's a really cool man movie, you know? It's one of those, it's like a boy's own adventure story with Vikings and crazy furry creatures and blood and gore. I love it. I think it's just, I don't know, there's something about the way it was all filmed. I mean, McTiernan directed the hell out of it. The production design was fantastic. Look, and I think for a little while it was rumored that it was the most expensive movie ever made at that time or something.
Really?
But yeah, I think for a short while it was considered like the highest budget movie in existence. But James Cameron probably dethroned it, I don't know. But it was, there was just something about it, man, that like, the way it was textured, the way the guys all kind of played their characters and stuff. I mean, I know one of the reviews just called the acting shite or whatever, but I felt that, you know, the guys were all giving it, they were being really earnest about it, and they just kind of pulled you into those characters. And I like, right from the scene where he's sitting around the fire and they use the old Hunt for Red October trick where everybody slowly kind of, their language all goes from Old Nord or whatever it is into English.
Yes, that's the fireside chat.
Yeah, that pretty much from that scene on is when the movie really had me hooked. And I've always kind of liked the Stranger in a Strange Land vibe too, you know, and just how Banderas adapts to everything and how the guys treat him and stuff like that. You know, like, it was the kind of movie that I could get into. It had enough going on that it kind of pulled me into its world. Rather than sit there and be wowed by action scenes or be wowed by spectacle, the movie just kind of pulled me into its setting, kind of similar to something like Master and Commander. You know, it's felt fully realized, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Dan, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a surprisingly good riff on Beowulf.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can nitpick timelines and everything, and would, you know, Ahmad Ibn Fadlan have been around at the time when, you know, if there was a historical figure that Beowulf is based on at the same time as that guy in the 10th century, you know, probably not, but who cares? You know, I mean, there's a lot of clever kind of parallels that are set up between, you know, sort of the movie's presentation of reality and what you find in Beowulf. You know, what sort of the source of Grendel is and the source of Grendel's mother and even the source of the dragon and the third part of Beowulf and stuff like that, which is pretty cool, you know, for what is basically a straight up action movie. And the other thing I've always liked about it is that the Vikings are, you know, they're all played by Scandinavian actors that,
right.
You know, I never had seen any of them really. And there's an authenticity to that as opposed to just getting, you know, a bunch of blonde Hollywood actors and,
yeah, a bunch of beefy.
Dressing them up, you know, putting them in horned helmets and stuff, and right,
covering them with some mud.
So they really look authentically like Vikings, and they act it out well too. You know, I mean, they're all sort of men's men, and they give Banderas a hard time, and I mean, it's just kind of a cool movie on that level. Like Steve is saying, there's enough attention to detail that you just kind of buy into the world.
Yeah, for me, this is one of those things where I went in having no idea what to expect. Like, me and my buddy just kind of bought a ticket and had no clue what to expect, you know? I remember I'd seen a couple of brief trailers. And if I recall, even the trailers didn't give a lot away. And this was not a movie that I don't think it was marketed heavily. So
I remember one trailer, and it was something that I saw online, and it was still called Eater the Dead.
Yeah, they really didn't. No one put their back into marketing this thing. So it was one of those going in there not having any idea what to expect and just being totally floored. Just like, I mean, everything you guys said, but I mean, to me, it is right up there. I mean, maybe The Expendables is that shit out now. I don't know. But as far as the manliest, most macho movie ever, it's really close. It's just a band of these bruising alpha males. Led by like the alphaist of the alpha males. All the women are either psychotic witches or submissive maidservants. those are the women's roles. So it's just, I mean, lots of sword swing, like well-staged action, you know, a good build-up. You know, they give you a little bit here and there, and then the nice centerpiece, there's like the night siege. That's a very nice action piece. And then just through the whole, when they kind of do their whole stealth – speaking of Navy SEALs, it's very much like a Navy SEAL incursion. You know, when they go when they go into the cave to wipe out, you know, to wipe out the mom there, and then it just ends with a nice little maybe a little too brief, just because it was just such a great setting and there's a lot of build up, but it was still a cool battle scene at the end, and it was just one of the all time great badass death scenes.
I was going to mention that.
Climbs up to his throne after wasting their stud and just sits there with his eyes open and dies while his giant badass dog stands next to him whimpering.
Leaning on his greatsword.
Right. And what's cool about that is, you know, if you're going to deconstruct Beowulf like that, one of the directions you can go, the kind of postmodern direction you can go, is to sort of show that the truth behind Beowulf, use it to like reveal Beowulf as a fraud, you know, as just a bad fiction or something. And instead, this movie goes in the opposite direction, and it's like, look, the real facts get turned into something poetic in the piece of literature, but the core of it is this dude was a badass of the highest order, and that's what the poem captures. You know, it almost, you know, very accurately what the movie says captures, you know, how awesome this dude was as a warrior, and how he inspired all these other guys around him and everything. Because that is, like, I can't think of a more badass death scene.
I really try to think about it.
Seriously.
I think it's really cool that they kind of they pull the same kind of trick that Fuqua tried to do with King Arthur and Ridley Scott tried to do with Robin Hood. I don't know how successful Ridley was. I haven't seen Robin Hood yet. But it's almost like I'm not familiar with Eaters of the Dead as a book, so I'm not sure if this comes from Crichton or not, but it's almost like they took the Beowulf myth, you know, the legend, the ancient poem, and they kind of tried to put it into a real-world setting. Like, you know, like, okay, you know the Beowulf story, but here's how it might have actually went down.
Yeah, I think you're close. Like, Eaters of the Dead was, as a book, it was laid out as some, like, as a historical document. Like, he sourced that thing. It was all, you know, it was all fictional, but it was put together like it was, you know, something that was sourced and almost academic. So, you know, so it's like double your subversion, you know.
So you might have read Beowulf. This is the real story. This is
something like,
you know, right. The untold story of Beowulf.
That's probably accurate. Another great death scene. Actually, this movie is packed with awesome death scenes if you think about it. I don't know his name, but he was like the giant, built like a tank Viking guy who takes like 20 arrows and is punching horses in the face.
It's the guy from Braveheart, wasn't it?
Oh, I can't remember. Probably. I don't know. I can't remember.
I think he took an arrow in the shoulder or something in Braveheart and wound up getting his hand cut off in one fight. And I think it's the same guy.
Well, this guy, if you remember, he's just just punching horses and getting shot at with arrows. just a stud and a half.
The scene at the beginning where they all kind of come together as a group. I mean, that's like the testosterone in that scene is almost overwhelming. Where, you know, one by one, they kind of stand up and join the mission.
Definitely. And, that was awesome.
It's just kind of, I mean, it's not even like any action is happening, and yet that scene is still awesome.
I mean, it really doesn't get any better than a bunch of badass Vikings banding together and going on a boat to somewhere to stab something, you know?
Right. Because there's something they think is supernatural, and so they just need to go and kill it.
That was another thing I really liked about it. You know, they didn't really play the boogeyman card. You know, like, yeah, these guys are, they think they're monsters and stuff, but, you know, you're not watching Outlander. You're watching something that might have actually gone down, you know?
Yeah. Right. Right.
All right, we're about at the end of this, so let's do our kind of finishing around the horn. Favorite moments of the 13th Warrior. We covered a lot of those, but we'll see. Well, let's distill it. Steve?
Favorite moment... probably the fight scene at the end, even though, like, the briefness of it. But like you said, man, that amazing death scene and the pouring rain, you know, and just the charge when the guys all kind of charge in. The imagery there is amazing. I just wish Crichton depending on who actually directed that sequence, because apparently Crichton took over the production.
Right.
But I just wish they had kind of opened it up, you know, and given us a good 20-minute brawl instead of the 5 minutes that we got, you know?
Yeah, and a great score. I think it's a... Was that Jerry Goldsmith? Is that a Jerry Goldsmith score? The Goldsmith?
I think it was.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually own that just because I used to When I was going to grad school, I worked at a preschool, and they used to play that during nap time.
Nice.
That is fantastic.
It is.
All right. Dan, how about you?
I got to go with the entire cave assault sequence.
Yeah.
Man, when they go down into those tunnels and everything, I mean, just from beginning to end, that sequence is intense and violent and crazy. And, oh, man, it's just great.
Well, I guess there's so many stud moments, but maybe the biggest stud moment of all is when kind of Bulvi's second in command there. I can't even pronounce their names, much less remember them. But he was like the cheerful blonde guy. I remember he's
wasn't it?
Starts with an H. Yeah. So
yeah. Remember,
and he faces off with that giant red haired dude. Remember
that is awesome.
So the weenie prince, they're trying to kind of undercut them. So he's faking it, and Antonio Banderas is going crazy, and then he just totally lures him in. Whacks his head off and then just walks away like the biggest.
So nonchalant.
Yeah, like the biggest stud. Yeah, so nonchalant. So, and a great line. You give an Arab a sword and he turns it into a knife. That's it. Yeah.
When you die, can I give that to my son?
So 13th Warrior, really? I mean, I don't know if that. You know, who knows if that'll get a high def release one of these days, but that would be audacious. That would be bodacious, and I mean, even it's, I mean, it was one of the first three DVDs I purchased, you know, maybe the first
for me too.
Yeah, but I mean, that just tells, and that was it. I think we haven't. That was that when that first one came out. That was it.
You know? Yeah, there has been another since.
Hasn't been another since. So,
I think it was actually a half decent disc for early Touchstone though, because I know Touchstone stuff used to be really, really horrible.
Yeah, this one looked okay. I mean, it was, you know, it's so old that the extra features they talk about are like interactive scene access. You know?
Right.
Scene selection.
Scene selection, yeah. So you know how old.
Cast biographies.
Maybe if they ever revisit it on Blu-ray, they'll let McTiernan record a commentary track from prison or something.
So, but great movie. Hopefully we'll see it given some nice home video justice. That'd just be wunderbar if it makes it. But, here's this for the Vikings. So with that, right, I guess we'll just send this one into Valhalla. So thank you to Steve and, Dan, as always. It's been a good time. So that just leaves us with one last piece of business.
Thanks. 10 points easy. Yeah!